Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for what day is it? What day is it?
Hump day.
Hump day. Yeah.
Okay. I love doing that on Wednesday.
In fact, that's one of my favorite commercials. There's some really good SportsCenter commercials that are out there, but my favorite commercial is that stupid Geico commercial with the camel. Mike. What
very,
day is it?
Very effective ad campaign.
It's a great ad campaign.
This is really caught on.
Do you know what Geico actually stands for?
General Electric Insurance Company?
That's a good guess. Actually, Government Employees Insurance.
Government Employees Insurance Company.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Even though it obviously is not just government employees anymore. Mm-hmm. But I wondered that. I didn't know that until probably like a year or so ago. I'm wondering, what the hell does Geico stand for? And originally, in its original form, that's what it, you know, that's what it was there for. And they've kind of branched out. And,
guess what day it is. Guess what day it is. Anybody? Julie. Hey, guess what day it is. Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike?
Part of it's the voice.
Listen, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy.
Yeah!
The camel with the New York accent that I think really does it. Like, it wouldn't work if it was a camel with a...
How great is that?
You know, a French-Canadian accent. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it wouldn't work. No, but it has that little Brooklyn kind of...
Yes, a Brooklyn camel.
Lilt to
right.
it. Yeah, yeah. Where's Brooklyn Matt when we need him, you know? He could tell us how much he really appreciates hump day. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, it's Wednesday. But we love that. We love the fact that it's Wednesday because on
Falcons
Wednesdays...
Week.
Yes, on Wednesdays here in the playbook, we turn the page and we do a little bit more than hump day. We actually start really diving into the opponent. And the opponent, the Atlanta Falcons, a team that,
they're dangerous now, John.
What's that now?
They're more dangerous this week.
There's
off
no
a loss.
Doubt in my mind, but I mean, where I was beginning with was this is a team that I think a lot of fans, a lot of media, they're all on the bandwagon before the season started as being a potential Super Bowl challenger.
I had them as a Super Bowl winner.
Out of the NFC. You have them as winning it this year?
Beating the Broncos.
Really? I didn't go quite that far. But I will say that I thought that they certainly were one of the three best in the NFC.
Still think they are.
I really did not pick Super Bowl teams this year. I honestly don't know why I didn't. I usually have in the back of my head what I'm thinking about in terms of teams and Super Bowl and everything. And I, you know, I remember this year thinking that when it came time to, you know, before the season started to start kind of, you know, earmarking or eye marking teams that, you know, look like potential contenders, I'm thinking my overall impression was is, wow, the NFC absolutely is crushing the AFC this year in terms of quality football. It just, to me, there were a half a dozen or more teams, literally 6, 7, maybe even 8 teams in the NFC that I thought were Super Bowl worthy. In the AFC, 2 or 3.
NFC, I would say, you know, Falcons, Saints.
Mm-hmm.
49ers.
Packers.
Seahawks. Packers. Bears?
Maybe the Bears.
Maybe on the
maybe the Cowboys. And honestly, I really did not think Washington or Philadelphia.
I almost have to throw New York in only because
that was
they've
the
done it the two times they've done it were years when they had no business winning it.
Right. They were 9-7 when they beat the Patriots. So I'm saying, yeah, I actually had New York as an outside shot too. And they're off to this, you know, horrid 0-3 start. But that's what 7-8 teams right there that we just listed.
Mm.
AFC, your contenders are
Denver.
Yep.
Baltimore, they're the defending champs.
Defending champs, got to throw them in there. And?
Houston, have to throw them in there.
I would put them on the same plane as I might have put New York in there in the NFC.
And
outside shot.
Cincinnati.
Maybe. Maybe. And I think we're beginning to stretch. And after that, what else is there? And everybody's screaming at us now, Patriots, Patriots, what are you talking about? No,
I don't
neither
feel
one,
it this year.
Neither one of us, and if you're a newcomer to the program and you somehow missed the opening week of our in-season programming this year, you know that Eric picked the Pats to go 9-7. I picked the Pats to go 10-6. We both agreed that this was a potential 12 or 13 win team that we did not think would get there for several reasons, not the least of which injuries would, you know, end up playing a factor. And I think we're both being proven correct in that regard. But even so, that this team is off to a 3-0 start right now.
As we both predicted. We went down the list, and that's the scary part.
We went game by game and told you which games we thought they would win. We differed on one game. And that's later on down the line.
Right.
But we both thought that they would start 3-0. Yeah. So that the scary part is that you have the Patriots going now 6-7 the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have them going 7-6 the rest of the way.
Right. The one fly in the ointment could be Pittsburgh, because they're looking dreadful right now, and they're coming to New England. I had that as a loss because I expected them to be playing a lot better football.
Right.
But on the flip side, I didn't expect Miami to be playing as good a football as they seem to be playing right now.
And I think neither one of us had them sweeping the Dolphins this year, though.
No.
So in that regard, then, you know, a split is a split, and I think you hope to get a split, but that might also limit your chances of stealing one on the road later on down the line.
We also should point out that both of us had them winning the AFC East, the Patriots.
We did.
Which means if you are in the playoffs, you're a Super Bowl contender.
You're a Super Bowl contender. So we did have them winning the AFC East, just at 9-7 or 10-6.
Don't feel all that confident with their being able to do much after that.
Exactly. And obviously we didn't think that Miami would be where they are right now either, because it certainly stands to reason that with a 3-0 start, and being now one of seven teams in the NFL that are 3-0, Miami is has a very good chance of finishing better than 9-7. So, or at least a chance to finish better than 9-7. To say that they have a chance to finish better than that is really, you don't know. Nobody knows, because what happens if they lose Ryan Tannehill? What happens if they lose, you know, Cameron Wake? What happens if they lose significant pieces
of the
puzzle?
And we've also seen teams start off with 3-4 wins and then
end lose up, 5 or 6 in
end
a row.
Up being, you know, 7-9, yep. Or
it happens.
It happens.
Ask the Buffalo Bills. It happens. You know,
happened to the Patriots one year with Bledsoe. Remember, they started off like 6-0, 7-0, got to a bye week, and then ended up like
losing 7 of 8.
Something.
Yeah, I think you're right. And ended up, you know, right around 500.
Yeah,
I think. It was an 8-8 year maybe. All right. At any rate, part of the reason is that we kind of surmise that this three-game stretch, the gauntlet, as you've heard it, I'm sure, referred to already by those that cover this team, and that we've talked about a little bit as well here on the air, that it begins this week with Atlanta, because not only do you have back-to-back road games that are going to prove formidable with it at Atlanta and at Cincinnati, and then you come back home against Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. After this next 3 weeks, we should have a little better picture of where this Patriot team is. Now, in all fairness, by the time this three-game run is completed, the Patriots still might not have their full complement of weapons. Certainly, we know that Shane Vereen will most likely not be, well, he won't be, he can't be back in the lineup until after this gauntlet is run. We don't really know yet officially about Rob Gronkowski and or Danny Amendola, although I did promise today that we'd have some kind of an update. So,
and
what is our update on those guys today?
You will be able to fulfill that promise, John, because
we
heard from both of those guys.
Correct.
Amendola was very surprising to me in some of the comments he made about his health. He was rather candid, and that's surprising for players on this team, given the short leash that
he hasn't
on.
Been around long enough.
Right. He was asked today, you know, how soon he thinks he'll be. He said, first of all, that he's definitely getting better. He's feeling better. And I think that's evident when you watch him on the field. Still not there yet. I still don't like what I'm seeing from him as far as being able to be on the field for a game.
Mm-hmm.
But he's definitely looked better today than he did last week. So that's good news. That's progress.
Mm-hmm.
Better than he looked the week before, whatever. But he also was then asked, you know, when does he think he'll be back at 100%? He said, I anticipate being
100%
shortly.
That's the quote.
Yeah. I was really stunned that he went that far out on the limb to make that declaration. Not only because you don't hear that kind of thing from players on this team very often, but also because of the nature of his injury. From what my understanding of it is, you need rest in order for that to happen, and he's not getting any.
Well, as you and I pointed out last week, I pointed out again yesterday, and I'm going to point out again today, he's practicing with this, which tells me that the injury can't be as bad as it was originally surmised, because we were actually talking a week ago how he might undergo the knife to fix this thing. And yet he stayed out at practice last week, although somewhat gingerly he was out there. And so if he could have done any more damage to himself by practicing, there's no way he'd have been out there. It told me then there was just no way he was going to hurt himself any worse. Otherwise, they'd have been fools to have him out practicing yesterday or last week or even yesterday for that matter.
I find it hard to believe that continuing to exert pressure and force on an injury is helpful to its recovery. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I understand it.
To me, if you kept him out for a month.
But it tells me, though, he can't do any more structural damage. So,
well, that may be true, but he may not be helping speed up the recovery process.
Well, we don't know. I mean, that's,
I don't know.
We don't really know. But again,
common sense
would
tell you that.
Common sense would tell you that, you know, well, yeah, sure, if he's going to be out there on it, then it's not going to get any better. But then my argument is, well, it's not going to get any better or any worse whether he's out there or not, so why not be out there? To me, that has to be the logic that was used in allowing him to even step out onto the practice field last week. And that if it was bothering him, guess what? Step into my office and, you know, pull down your pants and, we'll give you a little shot, you know, and that's basically what, you know, that's what would transpire. That's, you know, allegedly what transpired, you know, midway through the Buffalo game when he first hurt himself. So, you know, that may very well be the case. And if he said today, again, I anticipate being 100% shortly, I don't know when, but I'm getting closer. That was his quote. And then he said, there's a light, I can see it. Sometimes we all know that light's the oncoming train. But, you know, in his regard, you know.
His next three games could be.
Yeah, it might very well be, especially if he goes out there and he, you know, makes a sharp cut and, you know, he does it again to himself, which I think we all realize could possibly happen. So, I don't know. I just find the whole thing curious, to be honest with you. And if he can be out there practicing, then why weren't you playing? Well,
Gronk's been practicing too, and. Do you have the same question for him?
Yeah. I mean, if you can practice, can't you play? I mean, you know, generally speaking, if you can practice, can't you play? And if
to be fair, there are times when you are at practice condition, but you're not at game condition. In other words, you're healthy enough to put a
What's the difference between practice condition and game condition? How much difference is there really in that?
I think a significant difference.
Okay.
if you are recovering from a surgery surgeries like Gronk, right? And you're at the point now where you're not experiencing pain, you're capable of going out and running around without feeling any discomfort. Okay? But you're certainly nowhere near in the type of physical condition that it takes to go and play 60 minutes in the NFL.
Okay, I certainly understand that. I would argue, however, though, that that's not true practice condition. Because in practice condition, I realize that they don't do a lot of hitting in practices anymore. And frankly, I think that's kind of part of the problem here. I don't think these guys are actually in game condition enough that their practice condition is actually leading to some of these injuries.
That's possible.
And look at all the injuries that are going on around the NFL right now. And, you know.
Well, and a lot of it, too, is just, what's the term? Physiognomy? Bodies just can't be that big, that strong. The bones can't support that much weight going that fast, sustaining those kinds of impacts. The body just wasn't designed for that, John. These guys are enormous and are moving at ridiculous rates of speed and colliding with one another.
Which is also part of the reason why I would argue that, you know, hey, okay, you've got to be in game shape, but, you know, anything short of game shape, you know, couldn't you potentially hurt yourself in practice if you're not in game shape? So I just don't, I think practice
shape.
Well,
depending on what they ask you to do in practice.
Yeah, but I think practice shape is sort of a misnomer. I don't really think there is such a thing.
Well, because here's my other point, John. You can be out at practice, and again, we're only limited to a small window. which involves individual drills, not really any contact. You might be healthy enough to go out there and run through a bag, catch a couple of passes, run routes against air. And once the live action starts, when we're not allowed to see it, maybe they say, okay,
you're off to
go
the
off
side.
The side and run sprints.
And that's where we're all at a disadvantage.
So you can
learning.
Be able to practice but mm-hmm. not play.
Yep. Yep. I guess, and unfortunately, we
if this were training camp, we'd be able to see that.
We'd be able to see it, but right now we can't see that. And usually in training camp, guys, if they're not really able to play, they're going to wear a red jersey.
Yeah.
Right? Because we saw the quarterbacks, with the exception of the quarterbacks who are, you know, not hit at all during training camp, but, you know, the players who are, you know, not able to accept contact in training camp, they're usually wearing red jerseys. Devin McCourty was a great example from this last year.
Although he was making a lot more contact with people than a guy in a red jersey should have.
Should probably have done, yeah.
And there were guys who weren't wearing red jerseys who weren't doing anything and should have been wearing the red jersey because that they were doing the things that a red jersey guy is supposed to do
mm-hmm.
or not do.
Right.
It was a little weird.
So the entire conversation then about Gronk and Amendola, and we'll get more of the practice report here from Eric in just a second, but it kind of leads to my question of the day for our fans listening in. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. The hotline is 855-PATS-500 or the ACE ticket hotline at 508-298-0398. Twitter, @JRBroadcaster, and John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name, on Facebook. I would ask, as it looks like Danny Amendola and Rob Gronkowski are on the verge of returning.
Closer, at least.
It looks like closer, although, again, officially we won't know maybe until right before, you know, the lists come out on Sunday. It's entirely possible we'll take it right down to the last minute this week on that without any kind of a decision being made one or the other on either guy, and Gronk may be closer to Amendola than...
Well, he was this past week.
Yeah,
certainly.
He was upgraded to questionable.
Right, they were both doubtful for the Jets. Gronk was increased to questionable,
mm-hmm.
upgraded to questionable for the Bucs.
All right.
Amendola stayed at doubtful. And those are specific percentages.
If these players, if Amendola and Gronk are able to practice... Should they be able to play? Do you suit them up? Do you play them this week? Do you make them eligible against Atlanta, knowing what you got straight ahead of you for three straight weeks? That's what I want you to decide. I want Patriots fans to consider, A, the immediate need, and B, the long-term need. Play them or sit them. Gronk, Amendola, this week, Atlanta. Webradio@patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, or 508-298-0398. @JRBroadcaster and John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. There are your four forms of program. Now ready, set, go. So what are your thoughts on those, you know, particular aspects?
My gut tells me Amendola is not game ready. I would sit him.
Even though he's out there participating?
Yeah, because like I said, I don't know how much he's participating. Somebody did ask him that too, like, are you practicing throughout the whole session? And he kind of... for a second, but was like, yeah, I'm out there the whole time. He didn't really give a specific answer to that. So he's been limited officially on the report, limited, as has Gronk.
Let me backtrack just a little bit about Gronk. Saw a report last week, I think it was, by NFL.
Game day.
Yeah.
It was on game day.
It was on game day, right?
Yeah.
And it was actually the initial report came from...
the Ian Rappaport.
Yeah, Ian Rappaport, right, NFL Network, right.
Said
former
that,
Boston Herald beat writer.
It's the left forearm that's keeping Gronk back now, not the
not
back.
Not his back. And so game day went off on it.
Even
and then,
almost more troubling because
right.
that means that's something that's not... After all these surgeries... progressing the way it should.
Mm-hmm.
You almost would rather it be the back because that's the more recent of the surgeries.
Right.
It's also probably, I think, the more severe, but the forearm is not properly healing if that report is true. And that's more discouraging. But he continues to go out there every day and practice and continues to talk to the media once a week. And I would say of the two, Amendola and Gronk, the latter is more likely to play this Sunday.
Should they? Should he? If especially the report that we saw last weekend is true, that it really is his arm
then
that's
no.
causing the difficulty as opposed to his back.
Then no.
Yeah.
See, I kind of agree with you.
Because we saw what happened when you rushed him back from a forearm injury.
Yeah,
he re-hurt
the arm.
In a different spot.
Yeah, right.
And that's the part that's...
set him back.
That set him back with the infections and the multiple surgeries. And it's the second break. If they had let the first break heal sufficiently.
Yep.
Now, 2020 hindsight, it was going into the playoffs, and they figured if any time of year you play hurt, it's in the playoffs. But remember, they brought him back for the regular season finale against Miami. Who knows how much of the stress of that game contributed to the next week and the practicing all week. Because remember, that was the thing, too. He practiced before he played. You could have waited until the playoffs to start practicing him. And who knows how that would have changed the calculus of what happened. Again, it's 2020 hindsight, but those are factors to consider now when you're posing questions like this as to, do you play him now? Do you panic, quote unquote, and throw him in before he's ready to be out there?
Mm-hmm.
I say no. He's too valuable. Both of those guys are too valuable long term to press the panic button.
And especially since you kind of thought Atlanta would be a loss anyway before the season started.
The next three games would.
Yeah. So then why are you rushing them back if they're already going to lose these games?
Yeah.
Of course, if you have these two players, chances are strong, or at least you'd say they're improved, of potentially winning a game that you might
chances
not.
Chances are better. Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah.
But I don't want to panic and risk jeopardizing their health.
Long-term prognosis, which I'm sure is probably part of the overall equation concerning Rob Gronkowski and Danny Amendola, you know, today, tomorrow, and every day this week leading up to kickoff Sunday night against the Falcons.
It's really sad, though, but every time those two guys are on the field, I'm holding my breath that nothing goes wrong.
You have to hope that you can get to the point where you don't do that.
Yeah, anymore. And I'm not at that point.
No. So Eric says sit him. What do you think? Sit him, play him, based on what we know, what we've talked about. 855-PATS-500. Kat in Chicago.
Hey.
Hi, Kat. How you doing?
Long time no
I'm
see.
I'm good. How are both of you?
Excellent.
Pretty
now,
good.
I have to ask a question before we get started. Do you call talk shows in Chicago?
And I am, in fact, calling to discuss these allegations.
Aha! Very good.
It was not me.
Okay.
It was not me.
Wait, what happened?
Well,
somebody need to rewind. I'm out of the loop here.
Okay, so on yesterday's show, somebody called in and said that there was, I guess, a show. What the hell was it? Was it on Sunday Night Football, Football Night in America, or whatever I think it was, that they were doing a piece on the Chicago Bears, and there was a local talk show on 670 The Score, I think, there in Chicago, and an emailer called in, or actually didn't call in, but wrote in to say that there was an excerpt from a local talk show where a female caller was on it sound incredibly like Kat.
Talking about the Bears?
Talking about the Bears, and so they wanted to point out to me that you were cheating on us, Kat.
I know.
Kat, you're a Pats fan.
I
how could that be?
I know, I'm not. I'm devoted to Patriots Nation.
Okay,
so.
All right. All right,
no,
well, I'm glad that...
not me.
I'm glad you set the record straight then.
It was pretty funny. I was listening to the podcast yesterday, and I went, what?
You didn't realize that we were talking about you.
You were
supposed
to
have been burning.
Yeah,
that's right. Palms were itchy or whatever it is, you know?
But
ears
I
ringing.
Am thinking that I may be taking a trip down to Gillette for my birthday this year. The Pats play the Browns on my birthday.
Nice.
So,
all right.
You make it a stop by.
Excellent.
Yeah, we'll have to definitely we'll have to arrange.
Is there going to be some of that homemade Cracker Jack stuff?
Oh yeah,
coming with you?
I'll bring
Sweet.
That. I could bring you your beer too.
Oh, you still have that?
I do. Well, I've probably got like 8 cases of it.
Oh really?
God.
There's this special brew that is only available at certain times
nice.
Of the year in certain parts of the country and
in the Midwest.
Yeah, and Kat got a bunch, and I thought you only got like a 6-pack or something.
Oh no, well normally they limit, but I found a source that I can get.
Wow.
A lot more from.
Okay.
Well, now this time though,
send them to you guys, and nobody will send it. You know, UPS won't take it. And
right.
Yeah. Nobody wants to send it.
Right. Understood. Right. Understood. Well, this time though, you can't make an escape before my show starts.
No. I'll come to your. I'll come to see you, John.
Okay. There we go. All right.
We'll literally step inside the playbook.
Yeah, she'll have to step inside the playbook. And and by the way, we'll leave a chair for you here so you can participate. How's that?
Oh, good. Sounds
okay.
Good.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I was listening to you yesterday about your Welker and Amendola thing.
Yeah.
I would take Welker.
Oh, absolutely the right answer.
Yeah, I think Welker, honestly, I would put money on Welker playing longer than Amendola, the league.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I know he's older, but he was very lightly used his first few years. I think he's still got a lot of tread on the tires. So, sorry, but I would, and I wrote in many times to PSW before this, before the whole Welker Amendola thing went down, telling people they should not want Amendola the way that they did, and that they were going to jinx us, and mm-hmm. they certainly jinxed us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
you people that wrote in, I blame you.
Yeah, John and I were discussing that before we went on the air because I didn't know that that was yesterday's question, and he asked me what I thought, and I agree with you, Kat. It's Welker because I'm going to go with the guy who, even when he is hurt, he's on the field. He's able to go on the field. Not only that, he produces when he's on the field. Not only that, he produces when he changes teams. Now, granted, he's with, you know, he's changing from one of the best quarterbacks of all time to another of one of the all-time great quarterbacks, but he's still, he's not missing a beat from all the highlights I'm seeing in Denver. He's looking just like the West that was here the last 6 years. And I would.
Yeah, he doesn't look any worse.
He certainly doesn't look any worse. Doesn't look any older. He still looks like he can be productive in this offense if he were inserted back in here. And that's just the thing. He was reliable. It was his reliability, I think, that people took for granted. And the unreliability of Amendola that most people feared, and those fears are being realized now.
Right. And I think, too, going along with today's, I would actually start Gronk and get him some reps in the Falcons game. I think that the Falcons' D is depleted enough that I'm not as concerned about him really getting hurt and hammered by them.
Well,
so I would get him some. You know, I would limit his playing time, but I would get him some game reps.
Well, here's my counter. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
I was going to say, Amendola, I think this is going to turn out to be one of those nagging injuries. I don't think he's going to be back for any of these three games. So I think it's a moot point. I think he's still 3 weeks out. I would be very surprised. Just knowing the way that these type of injuries, groin, hamstring, that type of stuff tends to go, I'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm. My counter argument to your Gronk point would be that he re-injured the forearm against Houston on his own. It had nothing to do with a Houston defender. He mm-hmm. he injured it falling to the ground and trying to brace himself.
True.
So I wouldn't really say that a depleted Falcons D is helpful to him because he could easily just fall on the ground again and do the same thing if it's as in bad a shape as it was.
Well, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, Brady wears the knee brace. I feel like Gronk should be wearing some sort of an arm brace. I mean, he should, you know, there should be some sort of a strengthening plate or a wrap or something that they should be putting on this.
And in practice, at least,
no matter what.
Yeah, at least in the portion that we're allowed to watch practice, there is no such thing. He has bare arms.
That.
Yeah, he has bare arms on both sides. So unless they're adding stuff when we leave, it would appear that he's not doing anything to reinforce that left forearm.
Yeah, I just think that.
I think that's almost
ridiculous.
Foolish.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly,
foolish.
That scares me. That really that just
me
that
too.
Scares me.
I'm scared for both him and Amendola, really.
And really, how effective can two players be if all you're concerned with is being concerned over their relative health?
Yeah.
That every time they're going to take a hit, or every time they take a bad fall, or every time they make a big cut, every time they get hammered on the sidelines, you know, on a route like that, or Amendola in his case over the middle, you can't tell me that the first thing you're going to think of is, oh my God, I hope he's okay. And really,
right.
How effective can a guy be in long-term plans, if that's all you're really thinking about?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, I mean, the other thing, too, is that I've never thought Gronk was that great of a blocker. I mean, he's a big body. His technique, you know, he's not the strongest blocker, though.
Oh, technique he's a great blocker. Yeah, he is. I have to disagree with you there, Kat.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I mean, I'm holding them to a pretty high standard, though. I mean, I thought, honestly, I think the best blocking tight end we've had on this team in probably 10, maybe even 15 years was Algie Crumpler. When Crumpler was here, he was fantastic. And if you went back and watched some of the tape, his technique, his tenacity, and just the way that he did that was fantastic. And that's kind of the standard that I hold them to. I think Uh-Oh is a better blocker than Gronk.
Oh,
he's
God.
He's better utilized that way.
Wow. I couldn't disagree with you more.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been impressed with Gronk's blocking.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's because he's so big I expect more from him, or, you know, but I don't know. He's always a little tentative to me. I finally figured out what Chandler was doing in the preseason.
Could also have something to do with the fact that in some instances, he's trying to get off the line fast.
Maybe
he's not sitting back and doing what he's supposed to do. But all I know is that, you know, when it comes to, you know, running and it comes to forward pushing, he's usually in the lineup. He's usually always in the lineup, especially blocking on the side of the field that the Patriots are headed.
Well, he has added bonuses too, which is that he'll draw defenders just by being on the field. So, which, you know, Omanawanui is not going to do the same way. He's not going to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't offer the same versatility. So in that way, I think Gronk definitely is an upside. But I would, in the next few weeks, I would utilize him sparingly in those blocking situations, and I would go to the other guy.
Sure, that's fair.
But, yeah, but so what I was going to say is I figured out what Chandler, remember I told you Chandler was doing this weird pinwheeling, windmilling thing in the preseason, and I couldn't figure out what the heck he was doing?
Yeah.
I figured out what it was. He's never been that great balance-wise coming around the edge. And I think he was trying to figure out how he could lean more and he could get around the outside of the offensive line and get that lean and get in there and get fast. Because I noticed, I think twice so far in the regular season, he's kind of slipped a little bit when he's coming around the side. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a balance issue. I think he's still working that out. So, I think that's what it was, and he's looking better, so I'm happy.
What is this exactly that he was doing? With his arms?
He had some snaps where he put his arm up in the air, almost like a swim move, but I mean like fully extended up in the air.
Both arms?
Yeah. Well, one and then the other.
Hmm.
You know, kind of like you know, a pinwheeling or a swim, but it was really exaggerated, and I couldn't figure out what the heck he was trying to do. And he looked really gangly and you know, it was very strange. But then watching in the game, I think he has been getting more of that lean that they talk about, you know, with those elite edge rushers. And I think he's trying to develop that and taking, you know, a little more risk that way. So I'm pretty happy with it. I'm hoping that he continues to progress here.
Well, so far they're actually doing a pretty good job with putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and they're going to get another big test this next week going up against the Falcons and trying to get to Matt Ryan.
Yep, I'm excited.
Yep,
I think we're going to win this one. I'm a fan. This is the other thing callers need to understand. You guys aren't paid to be fans. You're paid to give your opinion, an informed opinion about the team and the season. We're fans. I'm a fan. I have faith. So I come at it from a little different, you know, I think all of us come at it from a little different perspective. So
I would agree with that. Sure.
I'm at 12-4, 13-3 maybe. So I think they win this one.
Once again, let me underscore here one more time that we think that we both thought this team was capable of doing that, but we just didn't think that, you know, based on the depth that they had, the inexperience they had, and injuries that invariably happen, and they already have, that that's where they would be at 9-7 and/or 10-6. Now, in a perfect world, should they get these guys back? Should they get a little good fortune, you know, shine on their backsides over the course of the next few weeks? 12-4 and 13-3 is certainly in play,
yeah.
And we'd be the first to stand up and say, "Bravo, you told us so."
Well, here's hoping.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys. It's always a pleasure to talk to you both.
Kat, thanks for taking the time
you
to visit
too,
with
Kat.
Us. It's always good to visit with you.
Thanks for squeezing us in between the Chicago radio stations too. We really appreciate it.
No, I'm squeezing you in between duct cleaning and wood floor installation.
Nice. Get it done. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Kat.
Okay, bye.
See ya.
Kat in Chicago. One of our more knowledgeable female fans.
Yep.
Certainly comes in. Although you sounded like you were really backing her into a corner a little bit on the whole Gronkowski blocking thing. Because frankly,
I just don't see it.
I
don't see what she's seeing.
Well, I have to admit that there was a Matt just hit me up on Facebook and he said, "Did Kat just say Gronkowski is not a good blocker? He could be the best blocking inline tight end in the NFL."
I would agree with Matt there. Yeah, I think so. I mean, nothing that I've seen has ever given me pause when it comes to his blocking. He's one of the reasons why the Patriots have had to they've had to overcompensate for his loss in the running game by putting James Devlin at fullback more than they might otherwise have, by adding Nate Solder as the tackle eligible a lot earlier than they might have. They had to find creative ways to get that extra blocking in the running game that Gronk provides. He really is one of the best that I've seen, at least currently in the NFL.
Well, our question is a simple one to you. Do you suit up Gronk and Amendola this weekend against Atlanta, knowing what you know, or maybe what we don't know about these two? If they're able to practice this week, do you suit them up? Webradio at patriots.com. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline, or pick up the toll-free line, and then we pay for the call. It's 855-PATS-500. Or you can hit me up on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is how you spell the last name. Now, Mary Beth on Facebook says, yes, suit them up, use them as needed. Just the threat of them playing could affect the Falcons' play. Interesting point. Because you almost would have them in there, and I guess in effect as a decoy. Atlanta has to prepare for their eventual playing anyway, because if you fail to prepare, then you prepare to fail.
I think they're
sounds like
a military.
Yeah,
slogan.
A military thing, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Was that a General George Patton?
That is something
Douglas has said.
MacArthur or something. If we fail to prepare, we prepare to fail.
That might have been Churchill.
Yeah. Oh, that was right. That was Winston Churchill. Yeah. Come on, UK Brits, let's go. UK Pats, it's your own guy here. Don't let me down. All right.
What was I just going to say?
I just digressed and I just threw you off track.
Oh, the Falcons are preparing for both of these guys.
They have to be, right?
Yes. Because it's not like they don't have to prepare for Shane Vereen, because we know he's out for an extended period. These guys are practicing every day. So you have to prepare for guys who are practicing. I know the Falcons are doing their homework there. I don't think that's changing how they're approaching their game planning for this week. It might affect how they play if those two guys actually go on the field. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then, sure, you have to maybe put a little bit more emphasis on one or the other, unless those guys are just completely ineffective and can't do what they're asked to do out there.
Marco says on Twitter, at JR Broadcaster, I think you do your best with what you have. Let them rest more so they can be 100% in the long term. We are winning anyways.
Good, Marco. They might not be winning for long, but, yeah, so far you've gotten away with three wins without them. And long term, you're better off erring on the side of caution. I agree with you.
All right. What else do we have for the rest of practice today? Was there anything significant of note besides those two guys being out there?
A couple of notes. Those guys were out there. There were two guys who weren't. Matthew Slater, that wrist continues to be problematic for him. And another injury that's problematic, right tackle Sebastian Vollmer, was seen leaving. Well, he didn't play the whole second half against Tampa because he hurt a foot, not sure which one exactly, but was spotted by some of our media colleagues leaving Gillette with those medical boots. So he wasn't out there today. Marcus Cannon took his place in the second half last week. Don't have very much confidence in Cannon. I mean, he was fine. He was okay. He had a penalty and a couple of poor plays against Tampa. But I would much rather have Vollmer out there. If today is any indication, it doesn't look like he'll be ready this week. Now, two more days to go. He could come back tomorrow. That could change. But being in a medical boot usually means you're serious enough that you'll probably miss a little bit of time.
Well,
Atlanta's not crying for us because they're just as banged up, if not more.
That will be part of the issue. And again, we'll deal more with the Falcons coming up in hour number two in just a short while. But I was going to say, if anybody is banged up, Atlanta is one of those teams that from top to bottom is banged up, not dissimilar from the Patriots.
And if they weren't, I don't think they would have lost in Miami this past weekend.
No, I don't think so either. And in fact, we even talked about that going into that game last week. So Atlanta finds themselves obviously in a more precarious position going in this week because they're 1-2.
Yeah, hard to believe, isn't it?
I'm surprised. A loss to the Patriots puts them at 1-3 and in serious trouble.
But after that, be at the quarter mark of the season, and
yeah,
there's still plenty of time to make.
But when
up.
You consider the competition that they got to go up against,
I think they if once they that team gets healthy again, they'll be there at the end of the season. They'll be right there at the end.
Who's in that division, Eric?
Well, it's NFC South. It's,
yeah.
It's okay. New Orleans, who's
right.
currently undefeated. That's one
right.
of the teams they lost to
yeah.
in a close game.
Yeah, and? Am I putting you on the spot?
No, it's just...
Carolina's there.
Yeah, I know.
New Orleans
I know,
is there.
I know.
Tampa Bay's there.
I know. Okay. Tampa Bay's not doing anything.
No, but I'm, you know, my...
Carolina's not really... I'm trying to be polite here. I mean,
yeah, I understand. Although they did have a pretty good win over the Giants this week. New Orleans is in that division.
Yeah, that's the one,
and they're 3-0.
They
are. So if New Orleans wins and goes 4-0, and Atlanta loses and goes 1-3, that's significant. That's significant. Quarter pole or no, that's a long way back. You got a long time, but then you also have to get some cooperation for the team that's ahead of you. Right?
Yeah. I find it hard to fathom at this point that the Falcons won't be in the playoffs, whether they're the South winner or a wild card.
A lot of that may have to do with how healthy they can get.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. And it's not like the Saints are, you know, world beaters either. They're not like tearing people up the way the Broncos are. They should have and probably they could have and probably should have lost to the Buccaneers
mm-hmm.
on the road.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucs messed that one up. It was a tight game with the Falcons. That one could have gone either way. Who did they play this past weekend? Can't remember.
Which one?
Arizona?
Arizona. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That wasn't a blowout either, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Was
smoked
it?
Smoked them.
Was it?
Yeah.
I didn't remember the
yeah,
score.
Yeah, smoked them pretty good.
Okay, so there's the one example. But two games against, you know, one of them, you know, two teams in their division were close games. So I don't think 1-3 is disastrous for the Falcons, if that's what ends up happening.
Interesting. I think you're probably right, especially if a team has some quality to it. Once you get healthy, then you can certainly, I think it stands to reason you can probably make a bit of a run. But you're going to have to make that run. You're going to have to bank on that kind of a run. And again, you got to get some cooperation. The team ahead of you also has to lose. It just makes it more difficult. But suffice to say, if they win this week and they go 2-2, even if New Orleans wins, you still keep New Orleans in, you know, in your, or you're still in New Orleans' rearview mirror, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And it certainly, it's a world of difference between, you know, 2-2 and 1-3 if the team ahead of you is undefeated. Who does New Orleans play this week? I know we got the Patriots a couple weeks. I have to look at the schedule already. Right.
I don't remember.
This one comes from Mike in Portland, Maine, who says,
love Portland.
Yeah, I think she just wants, I think he's talking about Kat, just wants Gronk in the passing game. She doesn't think of him as a premium blocker, though he is amazing as one.
He is.
That's
though.
Just fan passionate play. I am a big fan of women watching sports. Keep pulling in real fans. Thanks. Mike in Portland, Maine.
All right.
Okay. Fair enough. And then TG and NJ says, John and Squiddy, no to Gronk and on the Mandola this week.
Not on the Mandola.
I like that.
That's a Freddie Kirschism, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah. Or at least he was the first one I heard use it. I don't know if he's appropriated it from somebody, but
that's actually very clever.
Yeah,
and
on the Mandola.
I'm not sure why that hadn't been, you know, discovered yet. So if Fred Kirsch is responsible for that, then we have to give Fred,
yeah, we do.
We have to give him big kudos for that.
Yeah.
No to Gronk
and
on the Mandola this week. We need them to get 100% as quickly as possible.
So he wants both of them?
He wants no.
Oh no. Okay.
No
okay.
To both of them. Playing too soon will not help the team.
Right.
Don't you guys find it weird that Gronk's arm injury has been as problematic as it has? I mean, what was the initial break like? It just seems strange that it has taken so long to heal.
Well, it's not the initial one that's the problem. It's the second one.
The second one. That was the problem. It was not the same break twice.
Right.
It was actually broken in a new place.
Yeah, same arm,
area,
different
same
area.
Same arm, but yeah. But it wasn't the actual same fracture. I know there was setbacks, but it still seems strange. Wonder what the real story is. Oh, I know. He was inactive.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He was inactive.
Yeah.
That's what would be the response to, you know, well, what was the deal there? Well, he was inactive. So, okay. Thank you very much for that. And that gets to the whole media thing, which, you know, Ben Volen and I guess Michael Holly were kind of sniping back and forth at each other on what was silly and what wasn't. Although I understand Ben Volen had a Lulu of a question today himself.
Absolutely did. And if Holly was listening, he should fire this right back at him. I mean, one of the dumbest things I've ever heard asked by a football reporter.
Are you going to share with us?
Sure. Okay. I mean, it's available for everyone to see and read on Patriots.com anyway. But the line of questioning was about the Falcons, and Ben decided to throw in a non sequitur and go back to the Bucs game for a second and asked Belichick about a fourth down play where the Patriots offense stayed on the field for a bit and then rushed off and the punt team came on. And he asked Bill what the thinking was behind that. And I had to look around the room and make sure that I wasn't the only one who was having hearing problems, because you see that happen in almost every single football game at every level every week. That happens. Teams on fourth down are indecisive about whether they want to punt or go for it, and then at the last second
you rush the punt team.
Yeah. What was the thinking behind it? And Bill gave him the squinty-eyed, what the hell are you talking about look, saying we decided to punt. That was the thinking behind it. I mean,
you know, I make a case to my journalism students that the only stupid question is the one that's not asked. That was a stupid question.
there's your one.
There's the one.
There's your one exception you can bring up.
I mean, with all due respect, because I know, you know, Ben's a good journalist and, you know, and he's a very good reporter and he's got, you know, good, you know, credits and plaudits from along the way and before he came to New England and began covering the Patriots this summer before camp. But I think you have to sort of sometimes gauge, you know, what, and this is where I blame him for not really knowing who Bill Belichick is. You have to have experienced covering this team for a few years to really kind of know, you know, what you can and what you can't ask, and or, you know, or legitimately what is going to be answered, maybe is more the correct thing to say here. What will be answered and what won't be answered. And I don't fault anybody for asking a question, but for something that's, you know, kind of obvious to everybody, if you didn't stop and think about it. I mean, let me give you a perfect example. I remember I was covering the Baylor Bears in the old Southwest Conference back in the 1980s. I'm a rookie first-year reporter out of school, but I'm working for a TV station in Waco. The coach is a gentleman by the name of Grant Taff, who's still with the Football Coaches Association of America. And Coach Taff had a pretty good offense that year for Baylor, not much defense, pretty good offense. And so in doing the pregame interview with him, I said, so, Coach, I guess literally this week it's just about trying to outscore the other team. Isn't it? And he looked at me like, I believe that's why we play the game.
And he was generous to you?
Yes, he was. Oh, he could have hammered me. But we both started laughing. And I realized what I had done. Well, and he
I
was,
know it, what you meant was it's about outpacing
yes,
the other
outpacing
offense.
Yes, outpacing the other offense. But it was like, but, oh, but, you got to outscore the other guys. Well,
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's why we play the game. Yes. But I understand, and that had to be kind of what Ben was, I'm guessing that's kind of what Ben was going at today when he probably asked the question that he asked, because sometimes it kind of slips out of your mouth and you're like, oh crap, I wish I hadn't asked it that way. And Coach Taff was great with me. And like I said, we both had a nice laugh out of it. But you know, I guarantee you, I covered that team for 2 years. And then
he
I
never
saw
let you forget it.
No,
right?
He never let me forget that one. He said, yeah, we're here to outscore the other team today, boys. And I just laugh. Yeah. I'm like, thanks, Coach. Appreciate that. I deserved it. I totally deserved it.
Oh yeah.
But I guess I kind of
did it in a good natured way.
Yes. Right.
He didn't kill you.
Did not kill me, and he could have hammered me. So, you know. So,
yeah.
So we're all guilty of asking stupid things like that
from
time to time. So,
but yeah, I mean, it's just unfortunate timing on Ben's part to have said that, you know, a day or so after getting in. I haven't heard any of this exchange between the two of them, but poor timing on his part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, you know, you have to understand how to go about asking a question of the head coach, knowing full well that you're not going to get the complete answer that you're probably looking for, especially those that have not been around Bill or covered this football team very much. And of course, you know, we've been here since he's been here, and we've all kind of learned the hard way because we've asked our share of questions that probably seem like legitimate questions, and we get it thrown right back in our face. So naturally, after getting it thrown back in your face a few dozen times, you're going to be a little gun shy as to what you think you can or can't or should not ask of the coach in any particular instance.
I was just thrown off by the question itself. I mean, that's a basic football question.
That is a basic football question. Like the basic football question that I, had,
that's like
guffaws over.
I mean, that would be a completely legitimate question for somebody who's completely new to the game, who's not a journalist, somebody who's just a fan and says, why did they do that? Why did the offense come running off at the last? That's for somebody who is just learning the game of football. I was stunned when I heard him ask that. I couldn't believe it.
It was a tough question, too.
What?
I just asked to, I don't know if I'll mention the name or not, but a relatively prominent ESPN person to come on the playbook tomorrow. Never been treated so rudely in my life.
Really?
Yeah. I told him to go F himself.
No, you did
on
not.
The phone.
On the phone?
Yeah.
Somebody, so you were asking
wait,
somebody
we work with?
No.
Or just somebody?
No.
Oh, okay.
Somebody who covers
the NFL.
The Falcons.
Oh, okay.
And he was rude to you when you asked him to come?
Unbelievable. Like, wouldn't even give me give me time to get a sentence out to say the time of the show tomorrow, this, that, and the other thing.
Wow.
Just said, no, don't have time for it. I was like, listen, buddy.
Wow.
I was like, it's not like you're Peter King over here.
Wow.
It's not like you're Don Banks. I was like,
wow.
I had to go to the Somebody bottom had a of the bad, Rolodex to find you.
So you're not going to share with us who had the bad day today? You'd rather not?
Should I?
Well, I think he did enough. I think he gave people enough information to find out who it
yeah,
is.
I've never been like F you and hung up on somebody like that before.
Wow.
Especially
okay.
in the media.
Wow.
I was okay. like, have fun go covering Josh Freeman. Have fun with that.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, another hint. There you go. I appreciate that. All right. So as we're toward the end of the first hour, coming up in hour number two of the program, we're going to get a little bit more into the Atlanta Falcons, and more specifically for the Atlanta Falcons, covering them for Fox Sports South is John Manasso, and he's going to join us coming up in 10 minutes. But before we get there, we have duties.
We think.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
Now, before I divulge this week's, or today's word, John, did you do your homework for me? Did you go back and ask Robin
yes,
what
I
she
did.
Thought of any of the words from last week?
And she
did I stump the Schwab?
You stumped the teacher with the one on Thursday, which was
Newman.
Yes, she had never heard that before, so she was sufficiently impressed.
Okay, good.
Teacher Robin was in Miseruda. She was completely and totally impressed.
Very good.
All right.
Hopefully, I can do it again today. I'm going to continue on that theme. You remember what
the Newman
definition was, right? No, not that one, Jerry. Oh.
Hello, Newman.
No, Jerry, not that one.
All right, go.
You do remember what the Newman was, right?
Yes, vaguely.
Okay. The Newman was the deity that is said to inhabit things or meteorological events, that kind of thing. We'll keep with that theme, and today's word is nimbus.
As in cumulonimbus?
Yeah, similar. Nimbus. N-I-M-B-U-S. Nimbus. Do you know what a nimbus is?
Yeah, it's my brother. He's a nimbus.
No, he's a nimbecile.
A nimbecile.
Oh, a nimbus. A nimbus is the smoky, cloud-like aura that accompanies a deity that makes an appearance on Earth. What happened to my orchestra?
Those
bastards, they gave out on me.
They're laughing too hard over the nimbus
just
line.
They stopped playing. They're actually they're by the minute. I didn't put a quarter in.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. Right.
Crank up that jukebox,
right.
Only the best. Only the best
right.
here.
So a nimbus is the cloudy, smoky-like aura that accompanies a deity that makes an appearance on the Earth. So, you know, when you see like a god like Zeus descending upon, and he has like all of that cloudy smoke.
He's got this nimbusilic look.
Right. I think John's just going to focus on the nimbusil line and not on the actual word of the day.
That's going to be pretty hard for me to forget.
Oh, boy. So hopefully I've stumped teacher Robin again.
You may have. Miss Robin!
I can't wait till tomorrow to find out.
I'll let you know. Right. Nimbus.
Yes. N-I-M-B-U-S.
All right.
Nimbus.
Well done. Well right. played. See you tomorrow.
All right, bro.
All right. Going to take a time out here. More of your cards and letters and, of course, phone calls coming, of course. The question of the day is a very simple one. All right. Do you play Gronk and Amendola this week if they're both practicing? If they're both out there practicing, should they be playing? Yes or no? And why, if you care, webradio@patriots.com, 855-PATS-500, toll-free, @JRBroadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Ready, set, and go.
The word off-season doesn't exist in the NFL. Maybe for hot dog vendors and groundskeepers, but not for teams or players or fans. When the goal every year is winning it all, the road begins to be paved in February. Because there are holes that need to be filled, weights that need to be lifted, and next levels that need to be reached. Keep up with your favorite team with coverage of NFL Network 24/7 on NFL Mobile. Always having your passions with you? That's powerful. Call Star NFL to download NFL Mobile from Verizon. Airtime and messaging rates may apply. Coverage not available everywhere. Available on select smartphones. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest price on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
You know that celebration dance? The I just got a heck of a deal on awesome entertainment, so let's dance dance? You probably haven't done it in a while, so here's a reason to. Now until September 3rd, when you sign up for 100% fiber optic Verizon Fios, you can take your entertainment to the next level with America's fastest, most reliable internet. Switch to a Fios triple play online for just $79.99 a month for 12 months and get your choice of a $300 Amazon.com gift card or a $300 Visa prepaid card with a 2-year agreement. Plus, get a high-speed wireless router at no additional charge. You won't get that with cable. And that's an entertainment deal worth dancing about. So hurry. This great summer deal ends September 3rd. Visit gottogetfios.com and upgrade today. Technology that makes life more entertaining. That's powerful. Price is $89.99 a month for months 13 to 24. Rate may increase after 2 years. Verizon Visa prepaid card issued by MetaBank, member FDIC. Amazon.com is not a sponsor of this promotion. Restrictions apply. Fios available in select areas. Offer for new customers subscribing to a triple play bundle online with a 2-year agreement and ends 9/3/13. Taxes, fees, RSN fee, and other terms apply. Visit Verizon.com/Amazon for details.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Miami. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or across the street from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. Ace Ticket is Boston's own ticket agency. We've been serving our customers for over 30 years. Ace always has the best seats at the lowest prices. Whether it's sports, concert, or theater tickets, Ace makes it easy to get the tickets you want and the service you deserve. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS and get the lowest prices on the best tickets for all Boston sports teams. And with our free loyalty program, you get 5% back on all orders. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. Ace Ticket. Sit your ace down.
1-800-MY-SEATS. The Patriots Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, autographed memorabilia, and much more, including our new game-worn gear collection, where you can own a piece of authentic Patriots history. The Patriots Pro Shop, located next to Gillette Stadium, is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots Pro Shop, your team, your store. Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Hour number two, Patriots playbook here on Patriots.com radio. It's a Wednesday, which means we start talking about our opponents as well. At least try to dive into it a little bit more for you here. And with the Atlanta Falcons coming up, the one thing that really comes to mind when I think of Atlanta, and this is probably what I'm going to guess here, an educated guess, let's put it that way. One thing that comes up when you think Falcons is you think offense. And the fact that Matt Ryan, since his time at Boston College, he's come in and done really better than I think most people expected him to do since he came in light of the whole Michael Vick fiasco of a few years back. They've had a solid running game in the past. They got two outstanding big receivers that will be somewhat problematic, I think, to defend, Julio Jones and Roddy White. I know that White's had, some injury problems of his own of late, but trying to pick your poison here is certainly a problem, I think, that for any team that faces the Falcons is, you know, who are you gonna let, you know, get yards and who are you gonna, you know, try to defend and who are you gonna try to shut down and can you get away with picking one or the other? That has to be how Atlanta attacks other people. Atlanta has been decimated with injuries themselves. It's hard to say, and I guess use the term decimated when you're only 3 weeks into the season, but, you know, they've lost, linebacker Sean Witherspoon. They've lost, defensive end Croy Bierman. They've lost offensive tackle, Mike Johnson. They lost their fullback, Brady Ewing. You know, they've lost several guys that are.
Steven Jackson
is banged up, and, I know he's got a leg problem and may or may not, and probably leaning toward may not go this week, which, I guess would help from a Patriots perspective, but from a Falcons perspective, when you're 1-2, you've got some interesting choices to make in terms of your ability to be available or not. We've been asking the question of Patriots fans, hey, if they're out there practicing, should the Patriots suit up and play Rob Gronkowski and Danny Amendola? That's our question to you. So maybe we need to point that question as well to a guy like John Manasso, who covers the Falcons for Fox Sports South, also used to cover the Falcons on their website, and he joined us now inside the playbook. John Rook here in Foxborough. Thanks for taking some time.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
So how banged up is this Atlanta team, and is it a surprise to see this sort of thing this early in the year?
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons the Falcons have had so much success under Mike Smith is they've been very much injury-free. I mean, the last time I can remember them having anywhere close to this many injuries was 2009 when they went 9-7. That was the only year they didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, just going back to what you guys were saying about the injuries, from the St. Louis game in week two to last week against Miami, you know, 1 week, they lost five starters from that game.
Wow.
Bierman's out for the year, the defensive end, as you mentioned. And the real interesting thing about him is that Mike Nolan has traditionally been like a 3-4 defensive coordinator, and Bierman is the guy that they spent the whole offseason developing into an outside linebacker so they could morph in and out of 3-4 and 4-3. Mm-hmm. And then last week with him out, they didn't do any of that. So it may seem like a little thing, but in some ways it's kind of a big thing. The offensive starting left tackle, Sam Baker, didn't start last week. He's kind of probably a week-to-week thing. Steven Jackson, as he mentioned. Brady Ewing, you know, second-year guy. He's only played one or two games in his whole career. So, you know, a loss, but not, you know, insurmountable type deal. And Sean Weatherspoon is, you know, their top linebacker and one of their best defensive players. He's on that injured reserve designated to return, but it's still seven more weeks until they get him back.
Right.
So it's a pretty banged-up lineup. And Asante Samuel's already missed a game. He played the whole game last week, but only played like a couple of plays in the season opener.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Asante Samuel, because clearly there are some familiar people to Patriots fans on that sideline. And I know that a lot of people around here that follow this team closely know that it's kind of built in a Bill Belichick, Scott Pioli mode because of Thomas Dimitroff's presence as being the general manager of the Falcons and coming from the Patriots to Atlanta as he did. And, you know, so in that regard, it seems to me that as you kind of look down the roster, and I kind of try to familiarize myself with these guys, and I know as some of our fans will probably end up doing that as well, that these teams probably should be more familiar with each other than maybe the once every 4 year appearance that the NFL says they have to make.
Yeah, I guess so. One thing that probably makes it difficult for your fans is that the Falcons have really built through the draft. So it's not like they've gone out. I mean, there's Tony Gonzalez and OCU Manure and Asante and Steven Jackson, guys like that. But so many of the other guys, you know, really are draft picks. And so that's why you might not know a Croy Bierman or, you know, like Jonathan Mastiqua is a second-year guy who's taking a spot and going to start at the left end. Or another guy, Corey Peters, a defensive tackle who Pro Football Focus had as, I think, one of their highest-rated rated defensive tackles coming into this week in the league. So, you know, there's guys like that that aren't household names, but have helped the Falcons, you know, become one of the league's more successful franchises, at least in terms of regular season, over like the last 5 or 6 years. Now, having said that, over the offseason, the story that I helped report it, the Falcons were showing interest in Richard Seymour, who's a University of Georgia guy and apparently lives here in metro Atlanta and has a son, maybe a stepson, who is going to be a freshman at Georgia. And so the Falcons did talk to him, but for whatever reason, I guess they couldn't consummate a deal, and seems like he's kind of still content to sit out and not play right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what we had heard as well. I didn't realize, though, that he'd had that kind of discussion with Atlanta. John Manasseh, who covers the Falcons for Fox Sports South, joining us here in the playbook. All right, so they're banged up. The Patriots are also banged up. There are a lot of teams around the NFL that are banged up. Just from a purely, you know, a football observation, are you getting the sense that, you know, your own team that you cover notwithstanding, that there are more and perhaps more serious injuries this year than others? And what's your reasoning why that may be?
You know, in training camp, it did seem like every day there was a guy going down and kind of a big-name guy. I'm at a loss to explain it. I mean, one thing people point to sometimes is just kind of the fact that there's less contact. And so when there is contact, maybe the players aren't ready for it. You know, honestly, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the Falcons things have been either just normal football injuries or kind of freak things. Like Roddy White in the preseason, they're playing Baltimore. And he turns around in the end zone to catch a pass. He steps on, you know, the defensive back's foot and, you know, sprains his ankle really badly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of the things like that, Sam Baker, the left tackle, he has a long history of injuries. And last year was This is his sixth year. He was the first-round pick when Dimitroff got here. They drafted Matt Ryan third overall and then Baker again late in the first round. He's had injuries all through his career. Last year happened to be a contract year for him. And, you know, he had his best year. He stayed healthy all year. Now he's got a knee and a foot. Didn't see him out there practicing today. So, you know, he's another guy that it's hard to know whether he's going to play or not. Just getting back to the original premise, I don't know. I mean, I think those things, you know, go up and down probably year to year.
So what has the coaching staff said? I mean, I don't know how well or how close to the vest the Falcons and their folks, you know, treat injuries there, you know, like they're, you know, guarded state secrets like they do here in New England. But what have you been told about, you know, the current health of this team and whether or not this is something that's overcomeable in a short term, especially against a team like New England?
Well, they don't quite keep him under wraps, maybe like you guys do, but it's kind of close with Thomas being from New England.
Right.
Now, they did say in reference to Steven Jackson that they thought he would be out 2 to 4 weeks. So, you know, that injury came against the Rams, so I would be surprised if he comes back. You know, one thing that's worked out well for them is that some of the young guys have played pretty well. I mean, they do a good job scouting, and they have two undrafted rookie free agent linebackers who have both played pretty well. They have this one guy, Joppolo Bartu, an outside linebacker that they like in coverage, and he's played pretty well. Now, as to whether, you know, some of these other guys are going to get healthy, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Sam Baker came back this week. He's about the only other guy out there besides Jackson who, you know, would be, you know, within the realm of possibility of coming back. And, you know, that does seem like a week-to-week thing. I mean, we'll have a better idea probably, you know, if he practices Thursday or practices Friday, you know, maybe he has a chance. Because 2 weeks ago he sat out Wednesday, Thursday, and then practiced Friday and played. Last week he didn't practice at all, and they just ruled him out. So, you know, they're kind of going forward with, I mean, we got to win with who we have. And, you know, I mean, I guess it's true there's no other way around it, but Mike Smith, he has a pretty good poker face, and, you know, he doesn't seem to dwell on that stuff too much.
So I guess my next question would be is, you're sensing no real sign of panic at a 1-2 start facing a team like New England?
No, not from the team. I mean, I think maybe the fans and the media are kind of more in that mode, realizing the seriousness of it. And, you know, we had the open locker room session earlier, and we asked that question around, you know, Matt Ryan. I saw he did the conference call with the New England media, and
right.
You know, they very much try to compartmentalize and say, you know, we're just looking at this week, we're not worried about that. You know, someone even asked them specifically, they've never been two games under 500 in Mike Smith's tenure, and you know, Ryan said he's not even thinking about that. So, you know, there is a real core of veteran guys like, you know, Matt Ryan is a, you know, 6 years, you'd have to say he's a veteran. Tony Gonzalez, Asante Samuel, Yumen Yara, you know, Roddy White, guys who've been around, Steven Jackson, even if he's not playing. And so those guys know that, you know, you can't get out of it all in 1 week. And so if they do win, I think it could be that they're the more desperate team. I mean, this game means a lot more to the Falcons than it does to the Patriots right now.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, because they're a little wounded and they're backed against the corner with a 1-2 start, which is why I certainly get the feeling that Atlanta will be ready to go. You know, anytime that you have Matt Ryan, who's, I think, certainly proven already to be, if not effective, but, you know, potential, you know, star at quarterback, and you hear the term franchise quarterback thrown around like so much candy, I think, sometimes, you know, in the league. But I'd have to say that, you know, based on his first few years in the league, he is well on his way if he isn't already established that way. Part of the reason that he is there is because of who he has to throw to. Guys like Julio Jones and Roddy White, who to me might be the best, you know, bookend receivers in the entire NFL. I know White's been dealing with an ankle sprain. How is his health?
Yeah, it's a high ankle sprain, and so as I said earlier, that preseason game where he got hurt, it was the second preseason game. So it's something that's really lingered. One thing about Roddy White, he's never missed a game in his career. I think he's up to 131. You know, he's played in every single game of his career. And so he's probably, you know, his ability to cut on it is not great. We talked to him Monday. He says he's getting better. You know, he didn't really expand on it any more than that. But the big thing for him is whether he can cut on it. Now, last week against Miami, he only had three catches, and there was an enormous downpour, one of those typical, you know, South Florida-type deals right before the game. And so I think the turf was not great, you know, for someone on a bad ankle to be able to cut on. Maybe being indoors at the Georgia Dome on the turf, maybe that'll benefit him. You know, who knows? So until they can get Roddy White being back to the Roddy White that everybody's familiar with, I think the offense is going to struggle the way it has. I mean, 17 against New Orleans the first week, that wasn't a great performance. And, you know, this past week, Miami 23, a couple times they stalled at the two-yard line, kicked a field goal. They missed like a 33-yard field goal. So the offense really, it hasn't fired at all cylinders yet the way they need it to. And, you know, having a healthy Roddy White's a big part of that.
The other part of the offense that I wanted to mention, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, is Tony Gonzalez's, you know, continued presence at tight end. Will this guy ever retire? And I say that with all due respect, John. I mean, yeah. With all due respect, because to me, he's amazing.
Yeah. Well, two things about that. One, he actually says that he did retire and then was talked out of coming out of retirement. And two, like last year, he started off saying, you know, I'm 95% sure I'm going to retire. Then in the playoffs, he said, okay, it's up to 97%. And now he's just unequivocal. He said, I'm done. And as you know, or as you might know, he took off 3 weeks from training camp. And it was interesting because in, I think it was the season opener, Daryl Johnston on the national broadcast, Tony missed the block. And Matt Ryan got sacked, you know, missed the blitz. And Johnston made the point that, well, you know, you can keep the chemistry with catching passes when you miss those 3 weeks. But as far as picking up blitzes and things like that, maybe you, you know, that's something you missed. And Tony took exception to that. He wasn't too happy about it. But little indications like that, if he wants to take time off from training camp, I think it's this is really the end for him.
All right, and John, before we let you go, then we flip it to the other side. And defensively, we've already talked about Croy Bierman being gone. Sean Weatherspoon's out for at least you know, another 6-7 weeks or so until he comes back from the designation to return IR list, the new thing that the NFL threw into effect a year ago. So I know that this has put an inordinate amount of stress on the secondary, and no Asante Samuel or Asante Samuel.
Yeah, no, Asante came back last week and played his first full game. So I think he'll be ready to go. Now, curiously about him, you know, I'm sure you guys know plenty about how Asante is, and he has not spoken to the media since the regular season started.
Right.
Tomorrow is, I tried to get him to say something today, and, you know, he's out tomorrow. So we'll see what he brings out of his bag of tricks. I know last year when the Falcons played Philadelphia, he had one of his more colorful moments, you know, going up against the team that traded him.
Right.
So I have a feeling he'll be a little bit more understated this time around. But, you know him. He's a competitor.
Sure.
He's got as good a football IQ as anyone you'll ever see playing that position. So I'm sure he would like nothing better than to, you know, have an interception or more if he can.
Without a doubt, because I know a lot of Patriots fans feel like that's one player that the Patriots should have paid to keep, considering the number of cornerbacks that they've gone through since he departed.
Yeah, no, I mean, his big issue really, and stretching back into late last season and into the playoffs, is he's had trouble staying healthy. He's not the biggest guy. He's 32 now, but boy, when he is healthy, I mean, you can see it. You see it in practice. I mean, he's knows the plays, and he's, you know, jumping routes, and really just an amazing football IQ.
On defense, then, it seems to me then the focal point has to be a guy literally in the middle, kind of like the Patriots have with Vince Wilfork, and a guy like Corey Peters. He's got to be the guy that has to anchor a lot of things and probably take on a few more duties in the absence of some of those other players.
Yeah, you know, Peters is, last year he was one of those guys who started the season on the PUP list, physically unable to perform. And didn't come back till week 7. Just talked to him today. He was talking about how he's more confident. He feels like he's in great shape. So he's having a really terrific year. The other defensive tackle next to him is you know, pretty good himself. Jonathan Babineau, really good at penetrating, kind of an underrated guy. So, you know, those two are pretty good players for them. Parade Jerry is, he's kind of a backup. Sometimes they'll use a set where, or a personnel grouping where all three of those guys are on the field at the same time. That was kind of when they were trying to go to more of that 3-4 look. They haven't been, I don't think they really did it last week, though. But those two guys are really the key on the interior. And, Uvinora had the big breakout game last week with, he got his first two sacks. And, I think he batted down at least two other balls. And, the week before, of course, he had his first interception, which went for a touchdown.
Yeah, OCU Manure, another one of those guys that there's some familiarity, of course, with Patriots fans, albeit in another color jersey. All right, so this team gets to return home, which I'm sure is welcome, especially for a team that stumbled out to a 1-2 start. But I'd note that, you know, Atlanta has won 12 of their last 13 inside the Georgia Dome. Home field advantage apparently really seems to mean something to these guys.
Yeah, two stats that are kind of key for this one is that Mike Smith, I think, after a loss is something like 22-3 or 23-3. And the other one is the home record, which, you know, Matt Ryan in particular, he's only missed like two games in his career, and it's in 2009 where they were completely depleted by injuries and they lost at home to both Philadelphia and New Orleans, which is the year New Orleans won the Super Bowl. But his home record is something like 33-5 or something like that.
Wow.
So, they do play very well at home. They do play very well after a loss. So those are two big factors. But, you know, New England playing very well and, you know, poses a real difficult challenge. And the injuries are significant. So we'll see. If Falcons fall to 1-3, a lot of the real high expectations that they had coming into the season could be in big trouble.
We had a little bit of a debate in our first hour today, John, about, you know, whether or not 1-3 was damaging to the point that the Falcons might not be able to recover, considering the fact that the Saints have gotten out to such a hot start within the division. What are your thoughts on that concern?
Yeah, I think that, well, I guess the Saints have a pretty tough game on Monday night. They play Miami, so that's an interesting game, I guess, for both the Patriots and the Falcons.
Sure.
But if it's in New Orleans, so where the Saints obviously play great, if they go to 4-0 and the Falcons are at 1-3, I think that winning the division becomes really difficult, if not impossible. I mean, the Falcons' schedule is pretty tough. They still have to go to San Francisco. They have Seattle coming here. They have the Jets here, whose defense has played great, and the Falcons have had a lot of trouble with you know, the offensive line and blocking and giving up hits on Matt Ryan. He's been hit 19 times. Officially already this year. So, you know, there's Washington comes here and they're not playing great. But games like that are kind of few and far between. Even, you know, they play Buffalo and Toronto. I don't know, you know, that's kind of one of those weird games in terms of what to expect out of that. But it'll definitely be a challenge. And, you know, at that point, they may be chasing the wild card. And even from that standpoint, 1-3, that's not easy when, you know, you have other teams that are off to good start.
Absolutely. John Manasso covering the Falcons for Fox Sports South. Hey, thanks for the knowledge. Good stuff today. Sure appreciate the time.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right. Check John out as well. You can follow him on Twitter. I know we just put out some tweets on him, the fact that he was joining us here on the show, but he's at J Manasso, M-A-N-A-S-S-O is how you spell the last name if you want the latest on the Atlanta Falcons, you know, going into the game on Sunday. It's pretty interesting to get his thoughts on whether or not at 1-3 this team would be able to come back, or this team would be able to, you know, do something, in other words, to be effective and actually have a chance to win the NFC South. Now, I have to admit, if you're three games back, even though you're only at the quarter pole in the season, that's still a lot of room, because the other team has to, you can win the rest of your games, the other team might win too. You don't know. It's hard. It's very difficult, especially in an injury situation when you're still trying to get healthy. I think that the Falcons will play, and I'm sure we're going to jump into this much more tomorrow when we start doing predictions for Sunday. But I got to admit, I don't have a good vibe about this game. A lot of it is because, A, I thought about that
very thing before this season started, that this would be a very, very tough stretch, if not the toughest stretch of the entire season for the Patriots coming into these three games at Atlanta, at Cincinnati, and home against New Orleans. Teams that you don't normally get a good solid look at, you know, but every, you know, couple of years, if that. Especially in the case of Atlanta and New Orleans, because of the whole divisional rotation in the NFL. You play teams in these divisions once every 4 years. So, they're home. They lost a game last week. They felt like they should have won. They're banged up. Throw the other cliche in there. Their backs are to the wall. They've got the Saints streaking out, you know, and away from them within the division. And they just flat out need this game more. The Patriots are 3-0 and probably feeling fortunate to be 3-0 at this stage of the season. Doesn't mean they can't be 4-0 because they still got to play the game. Game is still played between the chalk lines. How many other cliches do you want me to bring out? It's all going to be about field position and turnovers, just like, you know, playoff games usually boil down to as well. And this game will undoubtedly have that kind of a feel because you've got two teams that were well thought of before the season started, that are considered contending type teams before the season started, and they're meeting early in the year. So I'm sure someone would look at this as a potential playoff / Super Bowl preview. I'd be stunned if that didn't come into conversation at some point in time during the course of, the national TV broadcast on Sunday night. I'm sure that it will. But the Falcons need to play with a little more urgency just because of what they got going on right now in the present day. Forget about December. Forget about January. Forget about, you know, the things that they can't control. They need to win this one more so than the Patriots need to win on their side. I frankly think, you know, because of the fact that they play exceedingly well in the dome, is the stat that I mentioned, they've won 12 out of the last 13 home games. I think that that's a definitive advantage, you know, for the Falcons. I have not yet seen what the line is on the game this week. I try to actually, you know, I kind of look at them just to see what the general consensus, the thought process is. I haven't even looked at the line yet this week. I'm sure somebody will tell me what it is, but I'd be surprised, first of all, if the Falcons were not favored. And frankly, they should probably be favored by more than 3 or 4. I don't know that they're worth a 7-point favorite here. That might be a little ridiculous when you consider, you know, the way that the Patriots' defense is played. And I do want to give New England some credit there, but
it's a 2-pointer right now.
2 points, 2-point spread?
2 points in favor of Atlanta.
Okay. That's probably about right. I'd be willing to give them about 3.5 to 4 just because of the home field advantage. Because generally speaking, in football, a home field advantage is worth what? 6 points? In the NFL, it's probably worth a little less than that. I think that's in college where you consider the home field advantage about 6 points. And then,
I think in the pros, it's like 3.
Yeah, I was going to say probably 3 or 4 points home field advantage in the NFL.
Yeah,
just
the
because
biggest,
there's so much parity.
The biggest line this week, John, is actually, I always look for Jacksonville.
Yeah, right.
You know, but it's not them this
week. Yeah, Jacksonville was a 20-point dog last week.
They're not involved this week. It is actually the Denver Broncos, a 10.5-point favorite over the Philadelphia Eagles.
They're the biggest spread?
Yeah, 10.5 is the biggest one.
I'm not touching that one. I mean, you never know when Chip Kelly's offense is going to go nuts.
For the most part, this week, John, are pretty small. There's a lot of fours and a lot of twos, which shows you there's a lot of good games this week.
Well, and this could very well be one of them, and I'm sure NBC is pleased to have this game, you know, on the national tube on the whole Sunday night football thing. Football night in America, as they bill it.
Even Thursday night, you get San Francisco and St. Louis, two teams that are both desperate need of a win.
Yep.
It's a divisional game.
Yep. Yeah,
that should be a half decent test.
I would think so. I would think so, especially with the 49ers stumbling badly over the last couple of weeks.
And Monday night, New Orleans and Miami again.
That's
two quality teams.
And as we just talked about with John, that the game will obviously have a lot of meaning for Patriots fans.
Yeah, well, I'll be rooting for the Saints in that one.
Well, of course. Even though the Saints are going to be an opponent 2 weeks on down the road, you definitely want to get. You want to start you with your advantage within the division as soon as you can.
But it'll be nice because the national games this week look like we have a pretty good slate.
This one, in particular, even though the Falcons are 1-2, I think we'll probably get suitable billing just because of the Falcons' preseason stature. All right, webradio at patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-298-0398. Toll free, it's 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500. The Twitter address is at JRBroadcaster, and then, of course, John.Rook on Facebook. A couple of Facebook posts have come in, then I'm going to get back to the emails. Let me see what I've got here. I have Michael, who has said, let Mendy, and I think he is referring to Amendola, let Mendy heal more. He is a part-time player, and we will need him later in the season. As for Gronk, activate him and use him situationally. Hooman is good for the game plan so far. Atlanta is banged up enough that Hooman can fill most of the tight end duties. You know, that's actually a pretty decent idea, Michael. I think there are those that would tell you that if Gronk is able to go, he should go, and he should probably go full bore. I just don't see the Patriots utilizing him in that fashion. Because I think, you know, I think as long as that guy's able to go, he should go full bore, but I don't see the Patriots doing that. You're going to activate him? Yeah, use him situationally. Maybe use him as a decoy. But if you're going to try to run at Atlanta, and I think the strength of their defense might be in that secondary, so if you're going to try to, you know, ball control, keep the ball out of Matt Ryan's hands so he can't keep throwing the ball, you know, to his big, tall receivers, you might want to just play a little keep away and use some ground game on the clock, and maybe that's what you want to do. Maybe let Gronk get in there and block. Who knows? He also says, this game may be very important to Atlanta, but it is very important to New England. New England needs to stay on pace with or pull away from Miami. New England does not want to be a wild card team in the playoffs. Miami is currently hot, and NE wants the division. That probably goes without saying, but sure. As I sort of alluded, you want to start looking at your divisional opponents, which is why we do this in the playbook every Thursday when we have Russell Baxter on the show, because you want to see what your divisional opponents are doing. These are the teams that you have to go up against directly. First of all, they're the only three teams that you play twice a year in a home and home. And second of all, they're your biggest impediment to getting back to where you want to go, and that's to the top of the division. Because you get in the division, you're guaranteed a home game in the playoffs, if not an out-and-out bye in the opening round if you have one of the two best records in the league. So, yeah, it starts with the division. And Miami is off to an unexpected 3-0 start. You know, kudos to the Dolphins. They'll have a test certainly on Monday night at the Superdome against New Orleans. Plus, you're going to be facing these teams the next few weeks anyway, so why wouldn't you want to watch that one and tune in and root for the Saints if you're, you know, going to go that route? Because, like I said, it all starts within the division. Matt says on Facebook, the one thing I worry about in dressing Gronkowski is going against William Moore, Atlanta's safety. The kid is a hard hitter and a big physical safety. I say sit him and bring him back in Cincinnati. Okay. Couple of different perspectives there. One says play Gronk, use him situationally. The other one then says sit him and bring him back for Cincinnati. So far, it's kind of a mixed bag of results. You still have time to give us your thoughts as to whether or not you should play them or sit them. Webradio@patriots.com on email. 855-PATS-500, the phone number. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter, John.Rook on Facebook. Steven in Killeen, Texas says, gents, in the case of Danny and Rob, I'm going to go with a barbecue analogy. He's going to make me homesick. Kevin, he's going to make me homesick. You can't instantly smoke a brisket or rush a good sauce. Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, my. I'm drooling just thinking about it. Let's take our time and get it right. History has proved rushing does not pay the dividends we expect. That's pretty good. Okay, I actually like the analogy, Steve. That's pretty good. Can't instantly smoke a brisket or rush a good sauce. It takes time. So let's take our time and get it right. History has proved rushing does not pay the dividends we expect, and that was the case, frankly, with Gronkowski last year. I think whether you thought it outwardly or not, inwardly, you're thinking when he comes back last year against Houston that it might have been a little too quick, and it turned out exactly to be the case. Plus, Steve says, and I'd like to keep the Wookiees getting more experience. Uh-oh. Well, if you missed yesterday's show, I kind of stumbled on the old tongue, but you know what, which I do a lot, I think it's appropriate, you know. That is a hybrid for rookie receivers, rookie wide receivers. So I just came up with the term Wookiees. So that's what we're doing with it. Wookiees.
We're talking specifically about Kimbrel Tompkins and Aaron Dobson, most specifically. All right. But good email there, Steve. Good email. All right. This one comes from our friend Michael in Stockholm, Sweden. Why is it we always have to say Sweden? We have Sven in Sweden. Now we have Michael in Sweden. Why is it just not Sweden? Am I pronouncing it right or wrong, or am I just being goofy on that one? He says, Michael says, I'm a third-year listener. I finally got my lazy ass out of the couch to ride in now. Okay. And he says, and this because of Big Al's rant yesterday of how bad Brady is on first and goal inside the 10. I got a couple of tweets after the show was over yesterday about Al. A, they loved, you know, see, Al, you actually have some fans, and Al, you also have some people who can't stand you, because I'll read you a Facebook post in just a minute. But he says, Big Al's rant yesterday of how bad Brady is on first and goal inside the 10. It's a hard statistic to find, but having access to the last three seasons with NFL Game Pass, I got this after going through all the regular season games. All right. Michael, you did the homework. I'm going to give you full credit for it. Here's what Michael in Sweden, whatever you want to say, this is what he came up with. In 2010, first and goal, right? Inside the 10-yard line. 17 pass touchdowns, 11 rushing touchdowns, 4 field goal attempts, 1 fumble. And that was courtesy of Rob Gronkowski. In 2011, first and goal inside the 10. 17 pass touchdowns, 10 rush touchdowns, 3 of them by Brady, 10 field goal attempts, 1 pick. All right. In 2012, last year, 18 touchdown passes, 17 rushing touchdowns, 4 of them by Brady, 8 field goal attempts. No turnovers. So Michael says, in the 114 times having first and goal inside the 10 over the last three seasons, 46% led to passing touchdowns, 33% of the plays led to rushing touchdowns, 19% led to field goal attempts, 2% led to turnovers. I personally have a hard time believing that there is more than at the most two other quarterbacks in the league that can match that, and none of them is named Tebow. The more worrying fact from this should be that about 90% of the touchdown passes thrown after having first and goal inside the 10 were to Gronk, Hernandez, and Welker. And right now you have none of those three players, I might add. That was me throwing that little part in at the end, right? Which should tell you that without familiar targets to go to, you're more susceptible to what? What? What are you more susceptible to? Uh-huh. As for Amendola and Gronk, if any of them would be rushed back, it should be Gronk, because I think his impact would be much greater. But my opinion would be not to play them if they aren't 100%. No need to take any risk against an NFC opponent. He says, love the show, by the way, and keep up the good work. Michael, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for getting off of your butt to do that. And we appreciate your good work, because that's an excellent bit of research right there. I don't think Big Al is loving you too much right now. But that's a good bit of research. So, well played. Well played. Good stuff. What am I... okay, I see what we're doing here. All right. Got it. All right, so as we begin to, kind of hit the tail end of the program here, two things really stand out. Two things really stand out about the Patriots and their chances this week to me. Number one, whether or not you have the health or the ability of Gronk and Amendola, and probably more likely Gronk, to play in the game. That's the first thing. And number two, whether or not the Wookiees can continue to, make the progress that we saw from this last week. And whether or not it's something that, Brady can continue to manufacture and continue to cultivate, I should say, out on the field. You're going to go up against an Atlanta defense that's reeling. They're hurt. They're banged up. They've still got some important pieces of the puzzle. You got a motivated defensive back in Asante Samuel going up against a former team. And so sometimes you never know how that's going to play out. But look at what Aqib Talib did last week against Tampa Bay. He wasn't outward about his emotion, but you knew he was juiced, and his performance showed that. He did a pretty good job against Vincent Jackson. And he got a pick.
So I think to me, this whole issue is going to be about the Patriot offense matching up with a somewhat wounded Atlanta defense and whether or not the Patriots can continue to make progress with the Wookiees, maybe with getting some of the guys back and putting some more points up on the board. I mean, last week it was 23. That's not a great amount, but it's an improvement over what we saw the first couple of weeks. I mean, you know, they had 23 against Buffalo. You didn't feel like they had that. Last week was a legit 23. You know, there were no gifts, so to speak. So I'm thinking, if the Patriots can put up 24 or more, then they might be in decent position to win the game. The flip side is how much Atlanta's offense will be able to stay on the field. If they can stay on the field and control the clock, Matt Ryan can chuck to Jones and White. It doesn't look like they're going to have Steven Jackson, but again, we won't know more until a little bit later on in this week. First injury report is due out in 10 minutes or less from now, from both sides. So it'll be interesting to see how that situation plays out. My best guess is that, you know, Atlanta will try to take advantage of what they perceive New England's weakness to be, and that will be the secondary. So the Patriots had best be prepared, you know, for Jones and White. And because White has been the one that has had the high ankle sprain that he suffered back in the preseason, don't be at all surprised if they let Jones, I don't want to say let him go, but let's say they put their attention to Roddy White. Oh, excuse me, the other way around. Other way around. No, Julio Jones should get the double attention and let White, because he's the one coming off the ankle, maybe they let him, you know, do what he can. A lot of it depends, you know, it's picking your poison here is really what it is. I would expect Matt Ryan to target Julio Jones quite a bit. And if the Patriots can find a way to limit one of those guys to nearly nothing, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win the game. But I'll put it to you this way. You're on the road. You're at a place where, you know, the home team has a great home field advantage. You're in the ball game, and you got a chance to steal one on the road. And, you know, with all things being equal generally in the NFL, that's all you really can ask for. Just the ability to try to steal one and play, you know, toward the end and have a chance to take one that you might not necessarily think you're going to get. And as Eric and I mentioned earlier, this is one at the beginning of the year we didn't think the Patriots were going to get. And as you played your own win-win-loss-win, you know, down the schedule of the Patriots this season, I'll wager that more of you than not said this was a loss. I'm just kind of going out on a limb. I don't think it's a big, you know, stretch. I'll wager that the majority had this as a loss, because you're not going to go through undefeated. Mike in Rhode Island says, my question is about Aaron Dobson. Do you think he has the potential to be the deep threat we wanted since Moss, if that's what we drafted him for, or do you think he'll turn into a bust like Chad Jackson? Well, you know, obviously, Mike, it's way too early to make any sort of delineation on Aaron Dobson. I think what we've seen, he's only been active to play 2 out of the 3 weeks. So what we've seen is we've seen some improvement, and that's really all you can ask for. The other thing is that when they drafted him, they liked his size, they liked his speed, they liked his hands, they liked his toughness. And so, yes, I think they have, designs in him being a potential deep threat, because he's sort of physically put in that same mode as Randy Moss. Ironic that both attended Marshall, but I think that's what they were looking for. Yes. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be everything but a bust like Chad Jackson, without a doubt. And so since they gave Rozai Dallin, you know, a couple of full years, and he never really got on the field, the cornerback from Virginia who was taken with the first pick of the second round a few years ago, then I can see them giving at least as much, if not more, time to Dobson, because frankly, the Patriots have not done a good job at all in scouting wide receivers. They just haven't. They've had trouble with wideouts. They'll give him every chance in the world to succeed. The thing that I'm most curious about, and thanks for the question, Mike, the thing I'm most curious about is why we really haven't seen Josh Boyce yet. And I don't know if this is because he's in the doghouse. I don't know if it's really because he's got anything nagging injury-wise. I mean, he hasn't really had any significant thing listed on the injury report. And why hasn't Josh Boyce been in the kick return game? you know, in the absence of Leon Washington? Why? I'm just, maybe these are questions that, you know, we should ask, you know, tomorrow as best we can when we have Eric back in, and we can surmise as to what might be the case this week. But Boyce has got, you know, potential world-class speed as well. I would think that it certainly wouldn't hurt. It might even be better for the Patriots to have him back to the returning kicks than a guy like LeGarrette Blount.
Sunday he played 17 of 73 snaps on offense.
So he did get into the game more. So there isn't any injury problem. I'm guessing what the case may be is that he's just, you know, been slower to come around with the schematics and what's expected of him offensively than the other guys.
As opposed to the Jets game, he was only on the field for two offensive snaps.
Exactly. So maybe he's slowly progressing. Frederick says, John, I listened to your Tuesday podcast on your Welker versus Amendola situation. Question. I would like your thought on would you have signed both plus Edelman at their actual contract if you knew the Hernandez situation during free agency? In other words, would we have been better with multiple top slot receivers? Why should we answer one or the other? I think it's simply because of the fact that Hernandez was also kind of a slot guy, too. It's a good question. I guess, again, it all boils down to what the Patriots are willing to pay for, and they assigned a slot receiver position a certain amount of money. And considering Welker's age and the fact that he has taken a physical pounding over the years, they just thought he was worth X, whether it's $5 million a year or whatever it was. They decided that's what he was worth, and they weren't going to budge from that. This is a team, as you well know, that just once they have it in their minds, this is what a guy's worth, that's what he's worth, and they stick to it. Now, you can't say that, you know, kind of stick-to-itiveness, if you will, hasn't paid off, because in the long haul, it has. This team has been exceedingly competitive over the course of the last decade plus. But would they have been better with multiple top receivers? My guess is they wouldn't have paid to have multiple top receivers, slot receivers. In other words, if Welker had agreed to the contract, which actually might have paid him more money in the long haul with incentives, as I'm sure many of you are aware, I don't think there's any question that they don't offer Amendola. I just don't think they do that. It'd been nice, but I don't think they offer him. Because once they got an initial I don't know, from Wes Welker, they immediately began negotiating with Amendola. So they gave Welker opportunities. They didn't sense that Welker was going to be there, and so they went and negotiated the other way, and then they basically said, all right, Wes, thanks, we're moving on. Jay near Rochester says, I've only listened to the first hour of yesterday's podcast so far. I don't know if you talked about this at all. I heard that Rob Ninkovich signed a 3-year extension and was glad to hear it. He has been a steady force on the defense, got there by making big plays when he had a chance early in his career, and as he got more playing time, he has made more and more plays. He's in the mold of some of my favorite all-time Patriots, Troy Brown and Teddy Bruschi. It was good to see him get some recognition by the team and also the announcers in last week's game. I'm looking forward to watching him for 3 more years. And he says, P.S., did you ever get confirmation from Kat in Chicago? Yes, Jay. And that was not her, if you missed the earlier part of the show. As far as Ninkovich, no, we haven't really talked about it, but I'm glad you brought it up because it does give us a chance to at least mention it. A 3-year contract extension obviously is a very good thing for him. I've always thought that Ninkovich came in as sort of a poor man's Mike Vrabel, not the least of which they shared the same jersey number, but he fulfilled that kind of a role, that hybrid role of, you know, defensive end, outside linebacker. That's the kind of role that he is fulfilling. And he's coming in, and even though they don't use him in the offensive backfield to throw touchdown passes to, like they did Vrabel when he was playing here, defensively, he is fulfilling that role and then some. And he's now beginning to be a playmaker. He's a guy that you can kind of depend on when you need a guy defensively to step up and make a big hit or even come up with a key sack or maybe force a turnover. He's a guy that is usually in the mix. That's the kind of guy that you want on your team. Guy that can begin to make plays, and I'm sure that has a large reason as to why they signed him to the extension. So, yes, steady force. He's been that and then some. He's been a slowly improving force on the defensive side of the ball. So I can't imagine that this wasn't in their plans for some time, that they've probably been working on this and finally came to an agreement where everybody would be happy. It makes the Patriots' numbers look good. It makes Ninkovich feel good. He's got some security now beyond this year. He's got a couple of more years to go, so all is well and good in Rob Ninkovich land. And by all rights and reasons, I think, you know, the fans seem to appreciate his effort on the field as well. This one comes to, this one comes from Flint. I'm going to give you the final word today. He says, love the show. Welker, Welker, Welker. I don't understand the fan squabble here. How is this even a question? He's referring to yesterday's question of the day. The guy gave his heart and soul here. They tried to replace him last year with Edelman until both Edelman and Hernandez got hurt. Anyone remember that? Some bastards were running him out of town before the contract talks fell through. Amendola is a little younger, little quicker, little faster. Obviously, he is a talented player, but Tom can't throw it to him on the bench. Wes is and always has been on the field. Pretty good final word to leave right there as we kind of wrap up that discussion. And our thanks again to our guest from earlier today, John Manasso from Fox Sports South, to get us at least start the education process on the Dirty Birds, the Atlanta Falcons, coming up. We'll do more of that tomorrow. Russell Baxter, ProFootballGuru.com, he'll be joining us tomorrow on Thursday as we break down the Pats and Falcons a little bit further, and we look at week four around the NFL. I think this is the first week that we have the bye week in play. Is that right? I believe, yeah, this is the first week that not everybody plays. So we'll take a look at that as well tomorrow. And then, of course, we begin the countdown to the Sunday night football game. Football night in America. Patriots-Falcons, 3-0 versus 1-2. How big is it really for New England? You can certainly make the argument based on today's discussion that it's perhaps a little more on the big side for the Falcons. More on that tomorrow as well. Thanks, Kevin. For Eric, I'm John. Same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow. It's the new weapon, the weapon of choice. Yeah, you can blow it this, you can blow it that. You can blow it this, you can blow it that. Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.